Wedderburn became much weepy and sweary when he discovered my whoring.
I find myself merely jealous of the men's time with you, rather than any moral aspersion against you. It is your body, Bella Baxter, yours to give freely.
I generally charge 30 francs.
Well, that seems low.
Hello and welcome to this extra special edition of the Get Your Film Fix podcast. You can smell it in the air, gents. Fixie season's getting closer and closer. Plans are starting to be made. Bookings have been finalized.
Well, Fixie season is here. You're saying fixies are getting closer.
Yeah, fixies are getting closer. They're getting closer. And today we're going to do one of our most anticipated movies of the year. We're going to be looking at Yorgos Lanthimos's Poor Things,
which was on Jeremy's list for most anticipated of the year.
Poor Things. That's kind of what I am right now. A poor thing.
Oh, join the club. We all are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's going around.
Lee texted us the other day about how he's upgrading both of his TVs.
No, that's not what I said. And as it turns out, I'm upgrading neither.
You know, we can all text each other our hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That was literally on Tuesday where I was like, guys,
space.
I think I'm going to get a bigger TV. And then I was like, Lydia, what do you think about getting... I didn't even finish the sentence before she's just like, I was like, yeah, she's probably right. It's probably stupid.
But Lee, so we drafted most anticipated movies, right?
This was your second pick.
My second pick. What did I have before?
Oppenheimer.
Ooh, yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah, Jeremy, your list... Well, three of the four on your list, and obviously we'll get into our Poor Things discussion, are looking good because you had Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and Maestro.
Ooh, I think
Air,
I'm winning this.
And Mission Impossible were your other two, though.
Ooh. You know, I mean, it's tough with the draft. You can't win them all.
Chapin's is tough because he's got
the
killer.
Very good at it.
The killer, which we were lukewarm on. Dune 2, which won't come out this year. Ferrari, I haven't seen it yet. Chapin, you saw it. Bo is Afraid. I don't think any of us have seen that.
And that's been out and available to stream for a while.
And Indiana Jones.
and Yuli.
Mine's not much better. The Killers of the Flower Moon and Napoleon and Zone of Interest. And then I have Challengers, which won't come out, and Next Goal Wins, which is, ouch.
Well, I mean, I think Lanthimos is a director that we all like to varying degrees, and we can get into our feelings on him. I know The Favorite did really well with us at the Fixies. And he's a director that, you know, as the draft predicted, that is somebody that I particularly am interested in what he's going to do because he's so unique. I think it was one of the reasons that I had a hard time with Saltburn was I think it was a little bit of a Lanthimos wannabe movie, but that also could have something to do with Barry Keoghan starring in it. My question for you guys when it comes to Poor Things, though, is in your mind, what did you feel like this movie was about? Because I have a bunch of suggestions, and if you guys need them, I can throw them in there. But I really don't entirely know what Tony McNamara and Lanthimos was getting at in terms of the theme. Because there's a bunch of them intertwined in this movie. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on what you took away from this film as far as the thematical elements. And then we can kind of go into from there whether it worked or not.
So I think in like the most Lanthimos way, it's a coming of age story.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is more nuanced and complicated than that. I read something that I partially agree with, but I kind of like it as a, you know, starting off point that this is Barbie on absinthe. And I do like the idea that this is exploring kind of an unfamiliar world, and as a result, like, relaying to the audience, you know, some very topical ideas. And I think this movie does this in terms with, you know, themes like feminism, themes like growing up, themes like family, responsibility, money, all of that stuff is kind of sprinkled in here. And I think that all kind of boils down to a coming of age story for Bella, played by Emma Stone. But okay. It's done in just this like there needs to be a term for that.
Lanthimosian way.
Yeah, Lanthimosian way.
Greek freaky way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's my number one on my list of what this could be about, is about either human development, female development, essentially just going through stuff and figuring out how to utilize that to figure out your life for empowerment, stuff like that.
Well, and your place in the world, like it's a, you know, it's like I'm sure this is not revelatory at all, but it's like a female Frankenstein's monster,
yeah,
type of idea. And it's like, where does this person, this thing belong in the world? And like, what's unique here is that Lanthimos kind of creates this fantastical world that's also not real.
Right. So, and we'll get into the sort of plot points in a second. Chapin, was that your reading on this?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a feminist awakening kind of thing. You know, she's, and almost like, I almost think of kind of, I mean, not only kind of crushing the patriarchy, but also crushing like the idea of what's, you know, women and how women are represented in movies. I particularly am thinking of like the sex scenes in this movie,
which there are plenty of.
Like, she's very, I feel very empowered in those scenes, and like, she likes sex and she kind of uses men for sex in a kind of unemotional way, which we don't
see
a lot. But
I don't even know if she's using them. It's like,
no, using literally mean like, she likes sex from men, even if it's not love. And, that's not really how we see women in movies often, and kind of squashes the sort of, I don't know, that kind of need for women to be sexual creatures that are only allowed to have sex when they're in love.
Well, I think it explores even more than that, like what women are allowed kind of period, because you have the finale, the final act of this movie, which is like, hey, Bella, come back to where you're supposed to be, into this role that you're supposed to be in, when Christopher Abbott shows up. And I think that's kind of putting a cap on exactly what you're talking about, that like, this whole movie is about like this woman kind of breaking conventions. And like, all of this is very cliche sounding, which this movie is not cliche in any way, but I guess the themes are all pretty simple in that way.
Yeah, well, let's go back a little bit. So, you know, Lanthimos is a director we like, and I like particularly because of his like wicked sense of humor, his twisted sense of humor, the way he's able to explore a lot of the things we just talked about using just wildly unconventional and unique ways of doing that. So I wanted to bring up the themes first, because I think really this is where Lanthimos started with this movie. He wanted to explore these themes that we just talked about, but he's like, how can I do it in a way that's unique to me, and for lack of better words, like fucked up but still engaging and interesting. And he absolutely pulls it off here. You know, the humor that I just absolutely love with him, I think, is here, you know, throughout. I just kind of like was stupidly grinning throughout this movie and a little bit awe-inspired that he figured out these ways to pull these absolutely batshit things off. I mean, the plot of this movie is Willem Dafoe's character, who's some sort of mad Frankenstein scientist finds Emma Stone's character basically dead with a fetus inside of her, opens up the fetus, takes out the brain of the fetus, puts the brain of the fetus into Emma Stone, the mother's head, and then you get to watch Emma Stone play basically from, excuse me, 0 to 30 within the and her develop in a fully grown woman's body. And we can get into her performance and how she does all that in a second.
Yeah.
But then utilizing that as sort of the backdrop, he also just says, fuck it, and puts it in not necessarily a scientific or a sci-fi world, but
kind of
an unrealistic, steampunk past that never happened. But, you know, because he's saying, you know, we have to put it in, we, in order to make this somewhat believable in terms of the reality of the story I'm telling, we have to put it in a world that nobody's ever seen. So, you know, you have this this mad scientist who's, you know, the animals in the house are all, you know, ducks connected to dogs' bodies, and like, I mean, all this stuff that just is wildly fun and funny and fucked up. And then you have Tony McNamara's script, who he's becoming one of my favorite writers. He also wrote The Favorite. He also wrote All of the Great, which is a TV show on Hulu.
It's very similar.
That I absolutely love. And his cadence and rhythm and sense of humor is just very, very unique. And like, he's just doing, him and Lanthimos together are just doing something that, you know, not many artists can do. And I think this is sort of like putting that all together if you really look at it, because it's not only that, it's the costume design so different and the set design and like all this stuff that he's like, he's taking this thematic idea and then just building whatever he wants off of it, because it's a movie and he realizes he can do that to entertain his audience. I think, I mean, I honestly think it's brilliant. I absolutely loved it.
Well, I want to, that's a little, a point I want to focus on just for a second is, and in particular with the world building, and you guys have heard me talk about this before, that I really admire, in often cases, like it sort of ends at admiration because it can be done, you know, well enough, but not necessarily great. The idea that you can just like mix reality and fantasy the way that this movie does, and like just kind of create a world that doesn't really exist, but for the sake of this movie, it does exist. And there's no explanation as to why the world is like this. There's not a backstory necessarily on Willem Dafoe's character. His name is Dr. Godwin Baxter, and she calls him God. and like, I think you don't need that stuff because what you said, Jeremy, it's a movie. You are allowed to do whatever you want. And Lanthimos may be the best at that in terms of that idea. Like you look at a movie like Dogtooth, you look at a movie like The Killing of a Sacred Deer, which is like very set in reality, but like so sinister that like you can't imagine that that's real. And like in all, and even in The Favorite, which is, I don't know, maybe one of his more grounded movies, is still a little bit batshit crazy at times. And I think he is so good at taking that idea that you can do whatever you want. It's your movie. It's art. And elevating it to like such a high level. And I'm happy with filmmakers attempting to do that, saying like, look, this is, you know, kind of a fantastical world and we have real people living in it. That's cool to me. I like that idea. The Green Knight comes to mind, which is a movie I really, really liked from a few years ago, but that was the same idea. Like you have these real characters and then you just have this like made up fantasy. And
yeah,
Lanthimos
just,
is so good at that. He's so
good.
It's
just, if he had like, he's like walking a very thin line here, because it could have gone sideways really quick on any of, you know, performances, over the top performances, over the top, I don't know, costumes, design, anything you want to say, over the top direction. Like,
but
there are, I mean, and we can get into anything we're critical of, but I think somehow he tonally absolutely nailed it. And weirdly, you know, when I think of Lanthimos, I think of more cynical than this movie, but this movie is somewhat warm-hearted, yeah. even after all.
But do you think this movie, I don't think this movie like is even close to a line. It never feels like it's like, oh, if this went a little bit too far this way, it wouldn't work. Like, I think that's what makes Lanthimos so impressive. I think in somebody else's hands, maybe yes.
Yeah.
But I think he is so good at this that like,
yeah, I see what you're saying.
It works fine. Like, you're not even close to the edge.
I agree. He knew what he was doing all along. But I guess I'm thinking, like, if somebody else had tried to pull this off, right. I could see it going so
And that's what
horribly.
I mean about, like, I sort of admire, like, people's effort to do this type of thing. But Lanthimos is, like, it's well beyond admiration. It's just such an achievement.
I thought it was fine.
Oh, come on, Chapin.
Really?
This movie didn't do a lot for me. I liked it.
This might be my favorite movie of the year.
I thought Emma Stone
for sure is mine right now.
That is crazy.
You thought what? You know, well, Chapin, you made up your mind in July, so.
No, that's not true. I am very open minded. I don't know. It didn't. I kind of fell asleep at the end.
you need to see it again then.
It just didn't do much for me. I thought Emma Stone was a revelation. You guys know I'm not like the biggest fan of hers, and I thought she was outrageously good in this and just such a performance.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, at least.
I thought Mark Ruffalo was totally miscast.
You kidding me?
I weirdly agree, but I also thought he was brilliant. I thought it's weird to hire
it. It is one of my favorite performances of the year.
I agree, Lee. It's fun, and he does a lot of cool things, and I think he just nails it, but I also think it was weird to hire a 50-year-old to do that role. I didn't even think about that. Somebody younger. But
Lanthimos makes some weird decisions in this movie. Namely, that, like, all these British characters are played by Americans. Like, I mean, all of
that,
them.
Why
all
does that them. Matter? It's
in
not
reverse
even real
all the time.
I know that it is, but that's got to be a conscious choice. And they struggle with the accents a lot. I don't think it matters because
like Ruffalo's accent is supposed to be ridiculous sound.
No, I think they all are, but I found Willem Dafoe's makeup very distracting, and I didn't think his performance was very good. I don't know this. I mean, I liked it. This movie didn't do a lot for me, guys.
The things that you're describing just are like I think are examples of like when a movie like this in particular just doesn't work for somebody because like the accents and the makeup, like they're all outrageous. And I think they work perfectly in line with this movie.
Yeah. And there's such a rhythm to it. And I think almost everybody was so on board with that rhythm. Except for there's two instances of this movie that I think keep it from being nearly perfect. And one, and they both revolve around Gerard Carmichael, who I think is wildly miscast in this movie.
Well, yeah,
he's not even an actor, really.
Yeah, he's the cynic. I mean, it was like he was in an absolutely different movie. Everybody else was getting the rhythm and da 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 da. We get the jokes and we know how to play. And then he'd just come in and it was really bad. I Sarah and I looked at each other like, what is happening now?
It's very interesting. He was in a movie I think he like wrote and directed last year with Christopher Abbott, who's also in this movie, called On the Count of Three, which is like this high concept movie about these two guys that like make a suicide pact, and it's supposed to be a comedy, and it like doesn't entirely work, and I didn't think he was very good in it. Isn't he a comedian? I know he's done a lot of work,
but there's other comedians in this movie. I think
Rana Youssef. Yeah,
I think he's a comedian, but also like, and I get what they were doing at this point, but like the idea, and I think it was really down to his acting. It probably would have worked without it, but like the idea of showing the poor people and the dying babies and all that sort of mm-hmm. thing, and her having to make that turn, which I understand is part of the arc and makes sense for that, but it felt a little ham-fisted in there. But other than that, I think this movie's nearly perfect and hilarious, and the performances, especially Emma Stone, are great. I mean, I think she is like groundbreaking in this movie. I mean,
yeah, to I would be agree able with to, that totally.
To be able to pull off just whatever she did physically, to go from being like a toddler to an adult, and all her just the light in her eyes when she would discover something, and it's not just the sex part of it, which I think they did such a good job with it, because it's not, like you said, Shape, it's not really about, it's not about her using men for sex. It's like this person who isn't restrained by any societal norms or expectations, just being like, oh, that was fun, let's do that again. Yeah. You know, and then once it kind of gets beyond that and she starts learning more and it becomes about her ideas and all, you know, I just think the way she played it, I don't know, like was brilliant. And also the way that it was written, in the fact that she had to sort of go through a bit of struggle and persevere through that in order to really have that sense of empowerment. It's just great writing and great performance.
I loved her in it. I don't know. I'm surprised about you guys' opinion on Mark Ruffalo. He's an actor that I think we all like. I liked him in it.
Don't get me wrong. I thought he was really good. I just thought it was weird casting for a guy that age to be.
But I would even maybe argue that he's better than Emma Stone in this movie. Like, But he steals every scene he's in. And most of them are with her.
He's playing a fun role. Leave it to Lee to
make the man the better actor.
You always make this point, Chapin, but like, you also can't stand any movies with women in them. So,
like what?
Well, Barbie comes to mind.
And this.
Well, I only watched half of that.
And Poor Things.
I thought, since you didn't like Barbie, this would be like your anti-Barbie.
I haven't seen all of Barbie, so I don't think it's fair for me to say that I didn't like it. But
you did, though.
I haven't
text messages.
I haven't liked what I've watched so far.
We'll show those text messages.
But guys, can I
post those in the show notes?
Can you guys open your minds just a second to my argument? I know guys both love this movie, and you guys want to. And I'm sure it'll have its day at the Fixies. And I liked it. I'm not gonna. But like, to me, this. I think Lanthimos's oddities, his sense of humor, his kind of, shocking.
Mise en scène.
I think the steampunk stuff, all that stuff, I think it gets in the way. Hmm. You know, like the first half of this movie, the stuff in Godwin's house feels, it kind of looks like a Tim Burton movie, and there's kind of some bad CGI, and there's the makeup on his face, and I found this humor and this existence to work so much better in a place like The Favorite, where it's set and everything you see in the frame is could be real, right? Like it's set in this real place, but you just see it through that Lanthimos eye, which in a lot of ways means a fisheye lens that you never see used in film, or a camera movement, or just an eye that no director has. And so he almost has to work harder and work almost in a more clever and subtle way in a movie like The Favorite. Whereas here, it's just like, it's automatic. You go in and automatically, you're looking at something strange. And so the strangeness is already there. It's not revealed to you. And for me, there was just a little bit too much remove from the story because of that. Like I just couldn't find myself I couldn't find myself relating to the story as much as I did in a film like The Favorite, which I loved and which stars all women. Thank you very much.
I mean, if you want to argue The Favorite's a better movie than Poor Things, I don't know if it's true, but I would.
I mean, I don't know, but that's not even the point I take away. Like, I think I get exactly what you're saying, Chapin, and I think, like I said, I really like the concept of what Lanthimos does here in movies in general. So for me, it works. But I can even, I can imagine even the possibility of a better movie here if it is dialed back a little bit. If you kind of, you know, take those wide shots of a city that aren't real and just insert Paris or wherever, you know what I mean?
But like, I think he grounds it enough in reality between Paris and like they actually go to Paris. Like, he grounds it enough. I think those other things are just needed in order for us to get like a, like I said at the beginning, the thematical concept. I mean, if you're gonna take somebody like,
but I think it's like a
the lobster. The lobster is in the same sort of world. It's just enough removed.
But the lobster never gives you like that steampunk thing that we're talking about.
The lobster is more like the favorite in that way.
Like, yeah. I know, but I think that's a little bit what Chapin's talking about, is that like this movie maybe doesn't need that. And I would argue maybe I agree with that. I don't think it hurt it in any way, at least from my perspective. But
well, you need it in the sense that it's essentially like a Frankenstein story. And
well, and it's a fairy tale. Right. And I think it almost has like at times this kind of like fairy tale picture book like way of progressing, like the page turns to this next scene, this next city, this next adventure. And I like that structure of this movie. But I guess what I'm saying is that if that were dialed back a little bit, like Chapin is suggesting, it is possible I like this movie better, because if you look at a movie like The Lobster, what I think is so brilliant about it is, you know, like I said about this, like there's no explanation as to what this world is all about. It's just that you pick an animal to become if you don't find a mate or whatever. Like, and I think just dropping you into the middle of that is so brilliant. And
okay.
I think it's the same idea applies, but it's like, it's almost like it's kind of helping the audience along, helping them understand like, hey, this is not the real world. Like, look at this image. And I get how that could not work. Worked fine for me, but I get how that could not work.
It's sort of like the better, the worst Wes Anderson movies. You know, that like, I like Wes Anderson's style, and when it's done really well, and in a sort of lighthearted way, like in the Grand Budapest Hotel, which I think is a little less serious of a movie than some of his other movies. But, you know, you just get sort of overwhelmed by the aesthetic, and it just feels hard to, it feels like you're watching like a twee diorama. You know, it doesn't feel like you're watching an experience that is meant to embrace you and pull you in. And I think that's a little harsh to say about Poor Things. I appreciate that. But, and again, like I said, I like this movie. I'm struggling to see how it was so great for you guys because of that aspect of it. It just felt so, I don't know. I was just so distracted by those elements. I really thought like, I found Willem Dafoe's performance like almost completely inscrutable. Like I could not get into that performance at all. I loved what's his name? Rami Youssef. And I love Christopher Abbott. Catherine Hunter, always great. One of my affixi nominee for me for
Macbeth.
Yeah. But I think Stone was a revelation, probably one of the best performances I've seen this year.
Well, that's sort of the answer to your question, though, is I think Emma Stone engages the audience enough to draw them in and find the reality in the world that's created, that
I would agree with that.
That it totally works on that level. I mean, I get what you're saying, and I don't think, like, I can't say you're wrong that all that stuff distracted you, but I think
Lanthimos
decided to...
Oh, you're right, Chapin, you're right, yeah.
Except for you're wrong.
You're right as always.
You know, build a world, and I felt like that world was completely amazingly engaging. And it was a sensory sort of overload, but between Lanthimos's sense of humor, the story he was trying to tell, the performances, I really, really enjoyed every minute. There was always something new to look at, and maybe it wouldn't feel that same way a second time, but first viewing,
yeah,
was
sure.
Great.
And that's totally fine. And I agree with you. And I'm particularly impressed this movie was made for, you know, just $35 million. It looks like it costs $100 million. I think the essence of Lanthimos that we've seen in Killing of a Sacred Deer, The Lobster, and in particular, at least for me, in The Favorite, were these worlds that could very much have existed, and nothing is, and the as I said before, the strangeness comes from the prism in which you view it through, not the actual world. And that's what I love about him. And I still need to educate myself, Jeremy, on his earlier films. Dogtooth, I know, is a favorite of yours.
Yeah, that was the sort of wow factor movie where I'm like, I can't believe people are allowed to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, ultimately, you know, I saw three movies last weekend, this being one of them, and I think it's the one I enjoyed the least.
We're going to have an interesting fixies, I think.
I think this, a lot of what we have discussed throws some wrenches into some of my fixie expectations, which is exciting for sure. Are we sure that Willem Dafoe isn't up to some of this stuff just in real life?
Yeah, like, I didn't find, I actually, the only thing I found distracting about his makeup was like, it was kind of close to what he looks like anyhow. I'm like, why not just keep the regular Willem Dafoe?
Yeah, he's kind of a strange looking guy.
Yeah, he's not, yeah. He has a very, very unique face and features. So,
like, would anybody be surprised if in like 5 years some article came out about like Willem Dafoe like performing strange science experiments on animals?
But my
favorite story about him is that in the movie Antichrist. Yeah. He has a full frontal nude scene, and he had to use a penis double because his penis was too big.
Why did
it was,
I
like,
read that
distractingly
recently?
Big.
I read that recently, like the last couple days. but like,
maybe that's just like what he has to tell. It's just a rumor that.
He was like nervous about the nudity, and he's like. Hey, Lars, could you just tell people I don't want to do it because my penis is too big? Would you mind? Could we just make that the story?
I loved even the gag. And again, this would have to be set in this world, like right from the beginning where, and it's all these small details, like that he has to hook this machine up to him and it makes him absolutely burp bubbles. like those little things, I absolutely delighted me. And they could only happen if Lanthimos is creating this world. And I think that's, you know, what he was going for.
All right. Well, I think there's going to be more discussions on this movie.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Well, we can all agree Emma Stone, amazing.
Yeah. And I will say, obviously we're not giving anything away, but it's not
screenplay.
A runaway. It's not a runaway for me
screenplay,
in the actress
amazing.
Category. I will just say,
I haven't really.
What
looked.
Does that mean? You mean
like there are?
She's
there
not
are,
dominating.
There's contenders for her. Like she's amazing in this movie, but there are contenders.
Well, I think it's a strong category, really strong category this year. and I think there'll be some surprises for sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't. I'm a little disappointed we're disagreeing on it, but also, you know, it does make things more interesting for sure.
Yeah. Should we move on to some other stuff we've seen?
Yeah.
So last night, as you guys know, I saw Godzilla Minus One. Mm-hmm. Specifically,
I
saw Godzilla Minus One Minus Color.
Okay, can you explain that? Because I did not know that was an option. And I did not read the article that you sent me, because I find it annoying when I ask a question and someone sends me an article instead of explaining it.
Especially, well, I was going to bed.
As well-versed as you, Lee. So I didn't entirely understand it either.
So I was sort of unfamiliar with. So this movie is a fully a Japanese movie that has now surpassed Parasite in terms of box office success.
This is a remake of the 1998 Godzilla movie.
Directed by Roland Emmerich. Roland Emmerich, yes, yes. Takes place at Madison Square Garden. It's a Japanese movie. It's directed by Takashi Yamazaki. And it has done exceptionally well. It was actually released in December, and it has done in the United States, and it has done very well at the box office, and it has surpassed Parasite in terms of box office gross domestically. Mm. And with the re-release of the black and white version, it is expected to pass, the second place movie. And it will only be behind Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon for the most profitable foreign film in the United States. Okay. Now, it was released in color. And while I haven't seen this specifically, what it sounds to me like is that the director's intention was always to have it be black and white. And having seen it in black and white, I totally understand why. It is an incredible throwback to the original Godzilla idea, which I've never seen the original Godzilla, but even...
Well, can I just interrupt real quick?
Sure.
Just be careful. I know nothing about this movie other than you highly recommending it, so I kind of want to keep it a little bit...
I won't spoil. I won't spoil anything. Unfortunately, I'm not sure you guys are going to be able to see it before the fixies. It leaves theaters after tomorrow, and there is currently no streaming date. So we'll see. But the black and white version, in many ways, works for the story, for the time period it takes place in, the subject matter, everything, and as kind of an homage. I don't even think homage is the right word. Throwback. To the original Godzilla. Part of the reason I wish I had seen it in color is because the effects and the cinematography are fantastic, and they look great.
Nominated for best visual effects.
It looks really cool in black and white, but in color, like, I think you would just really see how well it's done. But for a relatively simple movie, one that probably halfway through I was like, this is good, but maybe I'll uncheck the must-see. By the end, I was like, I cannot fucking wait to watch this again. Completely in Japanese with subtitles. Like, it was so, so enjoyable. I really am excited for you guys to see it.
Yeah, I'm going to be really disappointed if we can't see it before the fixies. Just, that's always a bummer, especially, like, movies like this.
The fixies are a little early this year, too, which is hurting us, but... There's also some movies that are just like so a little nervous. Slow to get to streaming.
Yeah, I mean, I watched this movie Amanda last night, which is sort of a dry, it's a foreign film.
Italian movie, right, I think?
Yeah, it's, it's almost like a Lanthimos light, weird characters being isolated, not knowing how to interact in society. But... It's only 90 minutes, and it's tough to get through those 90 minutes, so I wouldn't recommend it.
Huh. That was one that they talked about kind of early in the year on the Big Picture, Japan. I don't know if it was a festival movie, maybe a Sundance or Cannes. I don't remember. Huh. I think that's why it ended up on the list.
We all watched Blue Jean. Did we even talk about that?
Yeah,
on
we
the
talked
podcast?
A little bit about
we
that.
Did.
Yeah, we talked about that on Maestro. Okay. I'm gonna probably finish watching The Creator, which Jeremy will probably scare you, so you won't watch it. It's an AI movie with John David Washington, and it's like it has a 65.
Let me guess, it's pro AI.
It has a 65 on Metacritic, and so far it is like a solid 65, and I feel like you guys get what that means. Like, it's like this is a fine movie, but like it's not going to be in any type of contention unless it gets a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've watched a lot of movies, but
I saw the Zone of Interest, which I hope you guys can see, and I hope we can do a podcast
I'm seeing that Sunday, so I think that's going to be our next pod.
Yeah, I'm seeing it Friday.
Great. I'll say that, like, I don't want to spoil anything for you, as I highly recommend you guys see it, and I do think it has the one of the most extraordinary moments in film in it. I wonder if you guys will be able to guess which part it is. But for me, I just
hope
have not
so.
Been able to.
After that,
have not been able to not think about it. And I'm also curious to talk to you guys about it, because I wonder if you guys have the same thought that I do. But an extraordinary film. And yeah.
Well, I watched Sexy Beast because
that's one of my favorites.
I had not seen that probably since it came out, and I didn't remember a single frame of it.
It's a great movie.
Delightful movie. God, like, such a good time. And like, what a performance from Ben Kingsley. Yeah. Like, I want to be him. Not have his life, but like talk to people that way.
Yeah.
Like, that would just be awesome. Cause I'm like Jonathan Glazer is a major blind spot. I have not seen Birth. I have not seen,
Under the Skin.
So I was like, I need to at least catch up on a little bit of this before Zone of Interest, because even having not seen some of those movies, Zone of Interest seems like a departure for him, and
definitely.
I don't know, we'll see. None of us have seen Priscilla.
No.
I think we're waiting for it to get out on Max.
Yeah. We won't pay $4.99 for it.
Yeah. Oh, also, Color Purple, that's one that I wonder if it's going to be regular VOD before.
It should be. Probably next week or within the next couple of weeks. Usually it's 2 weeks after it goes on PVOD. It's available on VOD. I have absolutely no interest in that movie.
Priscilla?
Very little.
No, the
color
purple.
Oh, yeah.
So what did we talk? We didn't talk about the Oscar nominations yet, have we?
No.
No, and I will say, I am for the Fixies, I'm so excited to watch the Oscars together.
Before
we
go down that road, Jeremy, can I ask you guys, what are you hoping to revisit? Because I'd like to suggest a couple things to you guys.
Well, Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer, I'm going to revisit.
Please.
Killers, I revisited. Fine. So that one I can check off.
Watching the Killer again. I'm halfway through it, and much more enjoyable the second time.
I really started over before our podcast. I watched about half of it before the podcast.
Yeah, same. I was enjoying it a lot more, but.
That's one that's an easy revisit, so maybe I'll do that. But I'm definitely going to rewatch Oppenheimer. Admittedly, I'm waiting till February 16th when it's on Peacock. Gulp. Like, is Nolan going to kill himself just to roll over in his grave?
Hmm? Well, he knows that I bought the 4K Blu-ray, so he's not too worried about the Get Your Film.
I was thinking about calling NBC's marketing team and being like, you could change the name of Peacock to like Universal Plus and just be so much more respected.
Oh, one movie.
It's got cock in the name.
Yeah.
One movie that you should definitely see Chapin is Napoleon.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see that. When is that coming to, let's see, Apple TV? Do we know yet, Lee? February 9th?
Plenty of time before the Fixes.
You guys, so I try to keep it updated, but I'll send you guys the link to this website called When to Stream, and it gives dates on all sorts of stuff.
Obviously, the best movie of the year is Sisu.
Jeremy didn't like Sisu.
No,
God,
I liked it, but I didn't love it. Didn't Chavin? It didn't have the RRR effect.
Kind of
like
did.
You were hoping. No, it didn't. Wait,
so
Jeremy's,
when, I
don't know if Jeremy told you what he told me. It's going to really upset you.
What?
What did I say?
You said it felt a little Boondock Saints-y.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I definitely thought it was on the Boondock Saints spectrum. It was on the
oh, my God.
The spectrum.
It was on the spectrum. Boondock Saints had a spectrum.
Ugh.
It definitely would have been on it.
I watched Dumb Money.
I want to watch that just because it looks good and I love everyone in it.
It's it's such an easy one to watch. Yeah, it's such an easy one to watch. It's such a classic Craig Gillespie movie. Like, I don't know, he like is just grabbing all these like relatively recent history stories. It's fine. And I didn't know what, like, I had obviously heard about that happening. Honestly, the thing that I left the most with is frustration that I didn't like get in on that and just buy it and then sell it.
Well, I mean, you could say that about anything. Why didn't I put my life savings on the Patriots the first year they won, or the Celtics before they got Kevin Garnett? Oh, should have got in on that.
You know what we could do is just put our life savings on something else right now.
Let's do it. Well, anyhow, the Oscars. Anything stand out to you guys as a giant snub or unusual?
I do have something to say about that.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I look, like, I haven't loved what I've seen of Barbie, but I know there's a lot of controversy about Margot Robbie not being nominated for Best Actress and
Gosling.
No, and Gosling being nominated for
Gerwig not being nominated,
nominated for director. But I will say a couple things. One, Barbie is nominated for Best Picture, and if it wins, which probably won't, but if it wins, Margot Robbie will be accepting that award. She is a producer. She's the second listed producer on Barbie. So she'll be on, I mean, they're always on the stage, but she'll be accepting it. She is a producer. That will be her award to win. You know, Greta Gerwig is nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, obviously with the help of Noah Baumbach. You know, thank God she had his help. No, I'm just joking. But, you know, like, that's not
Tried to adapt White Noise last year, and nobody fucking saw it or knew what it was about.
That's not nothing. And also, the two of them probably made so much money off of Barbie that they're probably laughing all the way to the bank. So, I don't know. Like, I definitely think that she was snubbed for Little Women. It's hard to go to bat for a movie that I don't really like that much.
Well,
look, I just, my whole thing is like, the subject matter of a movie shouldn't determine the nominations. And the only reason people are upset is because the subject matter of the movie is about this sort of thing.
No, and that's not it. That is it.
If the subject matter was about,
it has nothing to do with the subject matter. It has to do with
different.
It has to do with the fact that there have been gripes about high-grossing popular movies not being recognized by the Academy. You're not even letting me finish. And then when one directed by a woman comes out, it is not directed in all those same categories. The problem is that the Academy not nominating Greta Gerwig for Little Women is why there is frustration about her not being nominated for Barbie. Because when you don't nominate somebody for when they do deserve it, that carries over. And now whether they deserve it or not, it is looked upon as a snub.
I mean, I disagree, especially with the Margot Robbie part of it. I mean, the amount of times I saw on social media people posting, this was what the movie was about, after Ryan Gosling got nominated. It is subject matter based. I mean, I think we all agree that Greta Gerwig should have been nominated for Little Women, but, you know, Scorsese... I guess he was nominated, but, you know, he lost to Kevin Costner, and I don't know.
I don't want to get these conversations are dangerous because I don't want to give fixie stuff away. But if you're going to look at actress, director, and supporting actor, I think the right person was nominated, and I'm not entirely sure that I will nominate Gerwig or Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
So I just think that's why I say it's a bigger picture problem. One, it stems from the Academy's not nominating women when they are deserving. But then the bigger picture is not the Academy's fault. It goes back so much further than that, with women not having opportunities to direct movies or to have good roles in movies. And so they weren't nominated because of that. So then that snowballs into the Academy's not nominating women. So then that snowballs into the Academy didn't nominate a woman for a high-grossing, very popular movie, when they've been saying for years the Academy needs to start recognizing movies that are popular. The Golden Globes added a fucking category of like most popular movie because there's been so much demand for that. But the fact is, they may not have been deserving for Oscars this year. I'm looking at the best directors right now, and I've seen four of the five movies. I mean, and I'm like, these look pretty fucking good.
I've seen all the movies directed. They're all exponentially better than Barbie.
And I'm looking at I'm looking at the best actress, Annette Bening, Naiad, Gulp. I thought Bening, speaking of Naiad, I thought Bening and Foster were both actually pretty fucking bad in that.
I thought she
was fine, but
that was just, her character was so annoying. That's another movie I did see. Her character was annoying. She played it well, but
movie was awful. Like, awful.
I agree.
I also saw Rustin, which was also nominated. Coleman Domingo was nominated for Best Actor for that performance. He's good in it, but also a pretty bad movie. And so, like, I don't know. They always get it wrong, and they are just in this, like, continuous, like, cyclical thing of where they can't get out of their own way because of their past mistakes.
Okay, well, wait a second. Okay, so listen, the thing that I have an issue with in this conversation, we should also point out that there are several incredible accomplishments in this. One, Lily Gladstone being the first First Nations woman to be nominated for an Academy Award. She'll likely win, which will be a huge thing. Justine Triet was nominated. She's a woman, was nominated for Anatomy of Fall, a much better movie, an incredible achievement in my opinion. And so there are good things. However, also, like, this idea about talking about the Academy like it's this single body.
I know.
There are thousands of people that
like
vote on
together,
these categories.
Yeah.
And it's not like a cabal to, you know, keep women down. It's, you know, there's certainly some sexism within the ranks of these people, but like, it's not as if they're conspiring to fuck Greta Gerwig out of an Oscar.
No, but I think, and it's a fair argument, and it has changed somewhat, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but historically it has been a predominantly older white male body of people that are casting these votes, which, if you look at that statistically and percentage-wise, those are people who are going to favor male-dominated films, male directors, things like that. That is historically true. And while that may be changing in terms of the Academy's populace, and there is also changes in terms of the opportunities that women have both in terms of quality of roles and in directing movies, it is still chasing its own tail. And that's why, to me, it's frustrating where people are saying, like, oh, this is ridiculous that Greta Gerwig didn't get nominated for directing Barbie. If she got nominated for directing Little Women, as she should have, there would be far less uproar about a movie that she may not even be deserving of a nomination for.
I don't agree with that. I don't think that's true.
I think it goes back to the subject matter.
I don't think people would remember that. I mean, I think it's a crime in my own eyes. Perhaps, but guys, maybe the bigger crime is Celine Song not being nominated for Best Director.
I don't know. Was that like an achievement in directing? I mean, to me, movie was more of a writing masterpiece, and the directing was just sort of sure-handed.
She was acknowledged.
I mean, even pointed out, Chapin, that it was a, you know, quote-unquote small movie in terms of direction.
I think Barbie was impressive directorial.
I think Barbie is well directed.
I think it's really well directed. I mean, I looked at that trailer.
I don't know
trailer
if it's in my top five, but
I thought, how in the world, this looks terrible. How in the world is she going to pull this off? And unlike Chapin, I think she did. I think it all.
I haven't seen the whole thing, so stop.
Well, you were texting us like you were mad at us for liking the movie.
It was just tough to watch, I felt like. Does it get better after the second half?
I would argue that it's the other way around, but. I like Barbie. I think it's funny. I saw Barbie in the worst imaginable state of mind. I had just been told that Oppenheimer was not going to play in 70 millimeter, that I'd traveled 2 hours to see. and that I and then they tried to show it.
We talked to we had like a whole podcast on that story of yours.
Don't you find that this is relevant to the conversation?
It is.
And then I went and saw it, and I still appreciated that movie
from the record.
I still appreciated it for a number of different reasons. But yeah, it's like, I mean, it's not, it will not be, I'll just say it will not be in my Best Picture nominees, but it will have some other nominations.
Okay. I also think, I mean, here's another analogy. Okay. In terms of the sensitivity about Barbie, I think it's analogous a little bit to Black Panther, right? Here's this movie that came out and got really good reviews. It spoke to an audience that is not often portrayed and spoken to in specifically in big budget superhero movies. It was kind of like an amazing revelation in that sense, just like Barbie. It did gangbusters at the box office, surprisingly. And at this, and you know, what's his name wasn't nominated for Best Director either. So like it, you know, that's kind of the point of the 10 movies, right? Like the 10 Best Picture things is that you can acknowledge these other movies that may not warrant or at least get director nominations. And let's not forget, one of the in the first couple years of this, the category expansion, Argo won and Ben Affleck wasn't even nominated for director.
Yeah, that is weird.
Well, we can all agree that the Academy just gets it wrong, and we get it right, and that's why we do what we do, so that we can have the
thing
actual.
Is, I think they did get it right. Sexist.
Well, I mean,
we're gonna throw some microphones in front of us when we're all watching the Oscars together, so we can live. Have a live.
Our people are gonna hear is us stuffing our face with pizza.
Yeah. We have to find the biggest pizza on the North Shore.
I don't even know where to do that. We might have to make it.
This is going to be chewing for 3 hours.
All right. Well, that was a argumentative episode, but that was good. I think we should wrap it up here, boys. And hopefully we can do Zone of Interest next week and get that out. Keep checking these off. Well done.
These two are fighting and ideas are banging around in Bella's head and heart like lights in a storm.
Oh. You're always reading now, Bella. You're losing some of your adorable way of speaking.
I'm a changeable feast, as are all of we. Apparently, according to Emerson, disagreed with by Harry.
Come, just come.
You're in my son.
What?